I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hi, I'm Dom Alessio,
and this is Other Side of the Tracks.
Each episode, we feature a new release and talk to the artist about the inspiration, meaning, and stories behind each song. In this episode, we take a look at Anthem of the Peaceful Army, the debut album from Greta Van Fleet. Hailing from Frankenmuth, or Little Bavaria as they call it, in Michigan, USA, Greta Van Fleet is a four-piece band made up of brothers Josh, Jake, and Sam Kiska, and drummer Danny Wagner. We sat down with Jake, who plays guitar, and Sam, who plays bass and keys, to talk over the writing and recording of their first record. Here's Anthem of the Peaceful Army by Greta Van Fleet.
If I could, if I would choose any place on the planet to listen to Anthem of the Peaceful Army, I think any place within nature's would be probably the optimal place to listen to it.
The Redwood Forest, Gulf Stream waters. I think all of it.
Yeah. The album is called Anthem of the Peaceful Army, and what kind of inspired that was, you know, all these shows that we've been continually playing, and it was a really powerful thing to see all of these people show up, whether it be at one of our shows or at a festival, but they're all kind of there, you know, united by music and for that one, you know, that one thing, and seeing them in those droves kind of was kind of like just an army of people, a peaceful army. And so I think Anthem of the Peaceful Army, that was certainly a part of it.
And instead of guns, they wield flowers.
Yeah, it's amazing.
So many people thinking different ways, you say. Where is the music?
It's a pretty far expanded region of where all the music came from. I think that when we got into the studio, we all thought that we were going to use the songs that we've written over the past 3 or 4 years as a band. But by the time that we got into the studio and we were about ready to get going on the record, we set aside about a month. But within 2 weeks, we've written probably about half the album of all new songs. And we took pieces and bits and you know, a little sugar on top from things that we've done in the past.
And I think, you know, a lot of the songs that were around for a while, we'd actually had recorded quite a bit of them. So we decided to re-record absolutely everything. And so, you know, even if they had been around a while, we've been playing these songs live for about a year and a half now, pretty consistently.
Yeah, and I think it was very advantageous to the, you know, to congeal the whole sound of the record. Just the fact that it was such a short period of time that we, you know, we did it over. And I think that it makes it very, very to the point artistically.
Yeah, I think what we're trying to do too, build visually, is start sort of constructing a visual platform for sort of the sonic medium that we have. So to sort of create our own world and sort of visually start doing that. And you have the mountain of the sun, you know, and you have, you know, in Brave New World, you've got drifters of the
high rift plains.
So all these things start becoming visual mediums, and the album was kind of like that. I think it's otherworldly. It's sort of a different world, sort of a different universe. And it's so today, within a small there are themes throughout the album that are sort of, you know, reflecting on, the human condition and sort of evolution and lessons of history and where we came from, where we are now, where we're going, and, you know, things of peace and love and unity and some of those elements. And those are certain themes within the album that sort of construct the deeper meaning through the you know, music or lyrically. But yeah, those are certain elements that are important. We're working with Al Sutton, who, and Marlon Young and Herschel Boone, who are both Kid Rock and Kid Rock's camp. And we'd worked with Al on the Black Smoke Rising and From the Fires. And, you know, an individual kind of, we'd been in and out of studios at a very young age, about, you know, 16 and the likes of around that time. And we got into Rust Belt Studios, Al Sutton's studio. And over the course of 3 years or so now, he's really helped shape us as studio musicians and basically given us the knowledge we need to be better studio musicians. And so that was that's why we wanted to do our first full-length album with him and those guys.
In an age of darkness, light up. And it wards away the ancient fears. March to the anthem of the heart. To a brand new day, a brand new start.
Age of Man. That was a song that was written on a mountain in the Chattanooga Mountains, in a cabin. We kind of went up for a week into sort of isolation and into nature, right? Which is where, you know, you have creative solace in a way. And we put together a few songs there, but Age of Man was one that had really come to fruition in that trip where we were writing. And message-wise, you know, lyrically, it's very much about the evolution of man, and that's a great deal of why it's actually on the album first, because it kind of is that overarching theme of the album, that is where we came from, where we are now, where we're going, you know, and the torch it still burns, that sort of thing.
I think it really is cinematic in a sense, and I think everybody really pushed each other in that recording. It turned into something that was bigger than the four of us. The Cold Wind is a very interesting song, being that it's a very up-tempo rock and roll song. But the twist is the lyrics, once you really go in depth with them, are quite morbid. And it kind of refers to a specific cycle of life, which is death. And it, you know, bad things do happen. And I think what it means to me is, no matter what happens, there's a future.
Yeah, and I think that's the resulting voice of positivity. I think Josh was reading The Good Earth around that time, a book called The Good Earth. So there's kind of some references to that in there, some nuggets, if you will.
Yeah.
When the Curtain Falls. That's one that was around for not too long ago. That's gone through a few different levels of evolution. I wouldn't say reinvention, but it started out as a riff that was kind of around. And it was probably maybe a year and a half ago that it was written, because I remember being in the garage still, basically, you know, jamming there and playing that through that. And I said, wow, this could be an entire song. So when we decided we wanted to, deem it a song, we kind of got together and pretty much arranged it in one day. And then after that, it just kind of took on life and became another, what an homage to sort of rock and roll. And it's a very, you know, blunt and simple stated song where it's not very difficult to be misconstrued or misinterpreted, and everybody will have their own interpretations of it and all of these songs, but it was kind of our kick down the door song, you know, like it's a real emotion and energy to it. Watching Over, that Watching Over is a song that we've had for a little while, and that we've been playing live for pretty consistently for a long period of time. And I think that was a song we kind of knew it had to be on the album, and what we did with that, again, it's a very heavy chorus riff, and I think that we were playing with a lot of different elements in that song, as far as, you know, there's sort of a Middle Eastern feel towards the, you know, strung throughout it, and using a sitar guitar for the solo, and the arrangement of that, we were also trying to do something a bit more avant-garde when it came to arranging the song and the parts. It's a relatively simple structure, but you know, hanging on one string as a pre-chorus and sort of, you know, playing that sort of scale was something that, you know, was unique. And I think we were playing around with different elements like that for sure.
Yeah, and I think it's also very lyrically driven and very lyrically important. I think it kind of brings into the picture whatever a higher being means to you. The background vocals in those little spots were actually the idea of the producers. That's just a little tiny sugar on top from the producers, and they have these ideas that may be minute, and it may be a small part, but it's a very interesting element when you add little parts like that and spots that you wouldn't really expect. And I think stuff like that really makes a song. And that's kind of, you know, how the team works together as far as the production goes.
Yeah, within that chorus too, there's it could become monotonous if there wasn't something that could lift it or lend it some, you know, some more character. And I think in the background, you know, there's that voice, that kind of low tonal voice that it almost sounds like of a spirit that kind of lifts those parts of it, and it becomes more, you know, you've kind of melancholy in that way. And I think that was a really good way to achieve that emotion. Lover, Leaver, Taker, Believer. That was a song that was sort of probably had written about four years ago, I want to say. And it's been something that we've incorporated in our set for a long time, and it quickly became the thing in our set, which there are, you know, simple structures or outlines of songs, and then there's space within that simple structure for sort of, you know, jamming and improvisation. And that quickly became a song that we incorporated in the set, where there's basically Lover, Leaver, Taker, Believer, which is what, a 7-minute song ish turns into a 30-minute song, because we've incorporated so many different elements within the breakdown, you know, and different parts of different songs, and some covers and some things that we move into it. So it was like a really loose arrangement for, you know, for Lover, Leaver live. So that was something that was done in the studio as well, that there isn't, it's not a simple verse, pre-chorus, chorus, you know, so on format as it is. There's so many different changes in that it doesn't really stick to a basic format.
And I think the song itself is a journey. And I think that's what the song really is about. It's about that rock and roll, and it's about exploring the space.
So that was another interesting thing about that, is the solo, which brings up a good point. Sometimes when a solo can be written, or it's another piece that's sort of improvised or just jamming, and that sort of the song determines whether my solo is written or it's improv. And Lover Leaver was kind of calling for something that was written. So I'd sat down, you know, the years ago when it was first written, and wrote the first solo, which kind of, you know, goes a few different ways, and then to even take it in a different direction, the second solo at the very end was a slide solo, which again takes it in an even further different direction.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
You're the one is potentially the oldest song on the record. I think it is.
Yeah.
And it's another one that's lived many lives and seen many different incarnations of itself. And it was actually perhaps the most simple to record, and perhaps the most difficult to record, just in, you know, stylistically. We wanted it to feel right, and we wanted it to really, really sound right. We really wanted it to be, you know, that laid back, classic kind of, dare I say, kind of country-esque rock and roll tune that it was born to be.
Yeah, I think that was a very important song to all of us, because it was the first acoustic song I think we ever wrote together. It was the first song that, with all four members, was put down the electric and pick up the acoustic and sit around the campfire and figure it out, you know. The The New Day, again, I think that's a really interesting story, actually.
The New Day was summoned once again,
yeah,
for this album.
And I don't think that, and along with that, that you particularly search out to find a song rather than it sort of lends itself to you. And in the case of New Day, it's really emphasized. And it was very much, there's 1,000 lives and there's 1,000 deaths every second. And if we were to write a song 5 minutes from now, it wouldn't be the same songs if we started writing it at this very moment. And I think we were all trapped, actually, at the house.
Oh, yeah.
It was a snowstorm.
Yeah, that's what it's like living in Michigan.
Yeah, so it happens.
Trapped inside and you have nothing but better to do.
So, yeah, we kind of sat around, and that was something that we were tooling around with, The New Day, and Josh kind of walked in and started singing to it, and we was working something out. And then Sam kind of walked in and started jamming around and working that song out, because there was nowhere to go. We were trapped for 3 days at home. And we came up with New Day, and in one day. it kind of took on its another meaning of, you know, it sort of can be simple to say that it lends itself to tomorrow will be brighter, you know, that sort of message.
Mountain of the Sun is one of the, you know, it's a bit more on the fun side of things. It's a moment where you can take a breath and, you know, enjoy life. And it's rock and roll. It's kind of an homage to Elmore James and what we grew up listening to.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, there's a lot of blues elements in the song and a lot of slide work in that as well.
And I think it's just another dynamic, especially, that we wanted to show. And it's kind of where we came from. It's kind of more in the direction of the EPs. And it's a bit of a bridge.
So Josh wanted to name the song Mountain of the Sun. And it kind of is a reflective thing of, you know, you would climb that to get somewhere, and at the top there was that song, and that was sort of what Josh wanted to do with the title and in, you know, bonding the song to the title. Brave New World. Brave New World is one of the songs that I find, to me, it's one of my favorite songs on the album. Is sort of a work of guitar work that I'm relatively proud of, as far as its, you know, ability to be technical and still show restraint. So it was moving in a very new, and again, that was an approach at doing something more avant-garde with a song for the album, and it's a pretty powerful message lyrically as well.
And on the whole album, I think Brave New World really exemplifies the full band, and we didn't really do any overdubs on that song.
That was the most minimal production.
It was the most minimal production because it sounds very quite big, and I think that's what we had the intention to do, is because that's the way that we work. We work as a four-piece band, and I think we all wanted a song on the record that was very quite stripped down as far as rock and roll instrumentation goes, in the electric sense.
Yeah, and I think I'm interested, I won't say too much about the lyrics. Josh isn't here, too. Again, it's that song in particular, it's it's really up for interpretation. But I think poetically throughout and lyrically, it's a song of rebellion, you know, it's a song of to fight back against any power that, you know, that makes you weak, you know. And you know, we will not be hypnotized, which is part of the chorus, and another poetic portion of it lyrically, a silent child climbs a mound of char where he plants a seed that grows beyond the stars. So I think that was a good feat of lyrical work as well, and it's a pretty powerful message.
A silent child climbs a mound of char.
I think just like Age of Man, I think that anthem is exactly what one would not expect from us to be a closing track on our debut album. And that's for the simple reason that it's not an electric song. It's a fairly minimal instrumentation. But I think when you start taking away the production, you get this shiny gem that is the song. And I think that it kind of heralds to how we work. We write songs on acoustic guitars, and that's how most of the songs are born and come, you know, that's how they come to life. And I think we really wanted to exemplify what the song was and what it meant without the distractions of, you know, aggressive guitars. It's a soft spoken message.
Actually, I believe that percussive part was played on a box that was laying around in the studio. And so we picked it up, and they had Danny, you know, just basically take some sticks to it, and that was it. You know, so that should to show minimalism on that. But yeah,
well, we
should do an acoustic album. Right?
Yeah, never know. And we took a lot of different pieces from different things that we've written over the years. So it's also a bit nostalgic in that sense for us, is that it's a composition of our work, you know, taken from pieces, bits and pieces from the last 5 years.
The end phrase of Anthem is the world is only what the world is made of. It's Josh would put it, you know, it's at the end of the day, there's so much to disagree about, but in the simple sense that we're all humans and that we all facilitate the same necessities, you know, to love and to feel loved, that the grass is still green, the sky is still blue. So, you know, there are things we can agree on. There, at the end of the day, the world is what the world is made of. And I think that's that we can agree to disagree. Yeah.
Anthem of the Peaceful Army by Greta Van Fleet is available now. To find out more, visit gretavanfleet.com. Other Side of the Tracks is produced in Sydney, Australia, by U Music Media House, a subsidiary of Universal Music Australia. This episode was edited and mixed by the team at Forbes Street Studios in Woolloomooloo. For more, visit othersideofthetrackspod.com.